there was a good teacher that Jerry talks about a couple thousand years ago who used this. When somebody asked him, what's the greatest of these 10 deals? And he said, let me tell you what's the greatest. The love of your Lord, your God, with all your heart and your soul and mind, and your neighbor as yourself.
And you know, he wasn't any more specific than Bill was.
I know.
He didn't designate who neighbor was either.
He didn't say who your neighbor was, did he? Like Bill on page 77 when he says, and the people about us, when he's not specific. This guy wasn't specific either. He says your neighbor is yourself, and he doesn't say who that is. I guess that's pretty broad. But unless I understand that I need to get right with socially with that broad group of people that I'm in touch with every day that I may meet in a crowd where there's unfinished business, then it'll be hard for me to maintain the emotional balance which is necessary for me to remove the obsession to drink. Keep that emotional barometer down where it's not necessary for me to drink.
Hey, they said there may, now I'm on the middle of page 83.
We'll move over to 83. If you give you just a second to move over there.
And you can follow along, because most of you know this by heart anyway. He said, there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them, but we can honestly say to ourselves we would right them if we could. For some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases, but we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, and considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone. If we're painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we're halfway through. We're going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past and wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we'll know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how his experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly.
Spiritual awakening.
And they will always materialize, but this is the kicker. If we work for them.
They ain't going to rub off on me. Not going to rub off on me just because I hang around you folks.
That's exactly right. You know, Dick told us when we got to step three in this presentation that the book, from then on, from step three on, tells us how to take the step, why we need to take the step, how to take the step, and what the results of the step will be. And what people overlook a lot of times is that the promises that we read in this book are not just coming out of thin air. They are the result of working the eighth and ninth step. So
we got to work for them. They're not going to rub off on us. We've got to remember that. And you can't become a parent by going to PTA.
Can't be a chicken by hanging around the hen house.
Can't become a chicken by hanging around the hen house. You've got to work for these things. And so then he goes on to say, as he finishes 8 and 9, folks, some people ask you again, I don't think I've had a spiritual awakening. And so you ask them this question, any of these promises fulfilled in your life a little bit? And if they can say yes, then the answer is, well, you're having a spiritual awakening. That's a slow process. Awakening is like the sun coming up in the morning. It doesn't all of a sudden, be there. It's a gradual process. So you can answer somebody positively that they have had a spiritual awakening by just asking them these questions about the promises. Any of these beginning to come true in your life? And he says this thought that we just read brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit.
That fourth dimension that he's mentioned twice before.
Fourth dimension. Outside the third restricted dimension of the physical social, that's that fourth dimension, the realm of the Spirit. We've entered that, the world of the Spirit. we've begun to have a spiritual awakening. He tells us you can't be out in there without having begun to awake spiritually. He said our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness.
Now, you know, we hear some from time to time in AA that steps 10, 11, and 12 are maintenance steps. You cannot maintain anything. These are not maintenance steps because it says right here, these are growth steps. The function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness.
Not maintain.
And you can, if you do what the program says, there's no way you're going to stand still. You're going to continue to grow.
Now remember that this is a step which had no basis. Golly, there's Jim Clark back there. I didn't see him. Here, who wants the information on the Decatur study? See Jim Clark back there. Raise your hand, Jim. There he is. See him.
Hey, Jim.
Good to see you, partner. This tenth step had no basis in the Oxford group. Remember when Bill asked for his guidance that night as he was putting these things down, God, through Bill, made a wise decision and said, I need to put something in there for the alcoholic that's not in the Oxford group's ideas. And that is what... You know, how can they live out there on a daily basis? Because I know the alcoholic, and I know that just what the alcoholic's done so far and what he continues to do will not be totally satisfactory for the alcoholic. Needs something to, he needs to constantly review this because it's so easy for us to get back in trouble. And that's why he wrote, that's why step 10's in there. Man, I'm glad it is. I said that when we were going through the steps a little while ago. I'm glad it's there. I think it is the key to my daily survival in the scheme of life. Without the 10th step, I think I would fail in this program. If I sponsor you, Jerry's already said, if you come whining to me about this and that, then you better memorize step 90 or page 90 and 91 in the 12 and 12, because I'm going to have you reading that five times a day, every day for 2 weeks, and see if you're still whining. And I just think that 10th step is so important. I think it separates the men from the boys and the ladies from the girls. And I just think it's so important. And that's what we're talking about here. So this is not an overnight matter. It should be continued for a lifetime. We continue to have to take that step 10 for a lifetime. Now, everybody always asks us, well, how do I take a 10th step? It's pretty complicated. But it's less complicated if we look at the big book because it kind of tells us how to do it. Watch what he says. He says, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear.
Now, where did we find out about these things?
Step 4.
Step 4 during the inventory process.
He says, when these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them.
Okay, and where do we do this?
6 and 7.
Okay.
And he says, we discuss them with someone immediately.
And that's what? Step what? 5. Discuss with another
human. We make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone.
Okay, now, you see, this was a big relief to me to read this in the book, because I had always had the idea that step 10 was the going to bed step. And when you get my age, you don't need to go in the bed step as much. I don't get in trouble in bed as much as I used to. I need a up walking around step, something I can take with me, because I'm on. Tell you, I am a real alcoholic, and if I get in difficulty at 8:30 in the morning, I'm full of resentments by 9:30. At 10 o'clock, I'm scared absolutely to death, because my defects don't run around by themselves. They've usually got several of them together, and when they start coming in, you know, they'll all be there. And unless I do something about that, by the middle of the afternoon, I am an absolute basket case. But if I do what this program says do, and I tell the guys I sponsor, I said, I want those inventory forms in just right across the back of your eyelid, so you can just close your eyes and you can see those forms. And you can just automatically go through there and do what you need to do. And this gives me the opportunity, if I choose to do what the program says, I can immediately, if I get in trouble at 8:30, I can by 20 minutes till 9, I have figured out what that situation is. I can ask God to help me be rid of it. I can call Dick, and I can make amends if I am there's any amends doing, and by 9 o'clock I can be on a good path again and on my day. You know, but it tells me, what I hear him saying is, we take 4, 5, 6, or 7, 8, and 9 on a daily basis, just to kind of a mop-up deal.
Many, many steps. You ain't got to devote 2 or 3 hours to doing this. It's a kind of a mini thing on the back of your eyelid, where you can, where situations come up and you can close them. You see the form. You see what you got to do. You see your own part in it. You see where you've been selfish, dishonest, inconsiderate, self-seeking, and frightened, and move on and clear it up and go on and live. An important step. Really important step. He says, then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance is our code. Now, he says, we've ceased fighting anything. This comes at step 10 level.
That's just some more promises now.
As we've ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. And he says, for by this time, sanity will have returned.
Now, what sanity are we talking about?
We're talking about the sanity that we wanted to be returned to in step 2. To be returned to sanity. So, all the way from step 2 to step 10, we've been working on that sanity. What is that? That I can see the truth of that first drink all the way through before I take that first drink. That I can be, and my mind will be whole as far as alcohol is concerned, like it is with other things. Well, let's see if I've been returned to sanity. Sanity's returned. Let me see if I can see the drink all the way through. What he said. He said, we will seldom be interested in liquor.
Oh.
If tempted, we recoil from it as from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us and without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That's the miracle of it. We're not fighting it, neither are we avoiding temptation. Remember this, when somebody says, do you feel uncomfortable at the company Christmas party or the office Christmas party? Doesn't say that here. Doesn't say we avoid temptation. Now, we don't hang around places that we shouldn't hang around the first couple, 3 months, but there comes a time when you can't expect the world to adjust all its drinking pattern and behavior just because you're around. So he says here, we don't avoid temptation. We feel, as I love this one, we feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem's been removed. It does not exist. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. This is our experience. That is how we react as long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. So you see, sanity has been returned. The kind of insanity that we were talking about, the condition of the mind when we're cold stone sober just before we take that first drink, is no longer there. It's been replaced by sanity, and I can see alcohol clearly and sanely. I can see the truth about it. Clearly illustrated by these promises on page 80, bottom of 84 and top of 85. Now it says, and you can understand why Bill puts this in here, because, boy, when the sanity is returned and I can now function out there and alcohol doesn't seem to be monopolizing my mind or my time and doesn't seem to be a problem, been placed in this position of neutrality, safe and protected, pretty easy for me to want to let up, isn't it? He knows the alcoholic, see. So he puts this paragraph in there, big warning, great paragraph. Hope you use it a lot. It's easy to let up on a spiritual program of action and rest on my laurels. Rest on what I've been doing up so far because it's given me this release from alcohol. Sanity is returned. But he said we're headed for trouble if we do. For alcohol is a subtle foe. Alcoholic feelings, alcoholic thinking, alcoholic... emotions, they're subtle foes. They sneak up on you. They don't give you any advance notice. They don't say, beware of the 22nd of February 2004, you're going to be upset because such a thing's going to happen. They'll give you any notice. He said, we're not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent upon the maintenance of our spiritual condition. He says, every day is a day that we must carry the vision of God's will into all our activities. How can I best serve thee? Thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. And he says, remember in step 3, I made a decision to turn my will over to the care of God. So I kind of had to abandon my will, didn't I? I couldn't have, God had to have it, 100%. But see what he says now, that if in all my activities every day I ask God, how can I best serve you, thy will not mine be done, and these thoughts go with me constantly, here's what he says, I can exercise my willpower along this line all I wish, it's the proper use of the will. So what does he do? He gives my will back to me under certain conditions, under certain stipulations, you see.
It's nice we got our sanity back on the page before. I'd hate to think I got my will back before I got my sanity.
You see?
I'd be dangerous.
You see how he does that? We get our will back right here. But we got to use it under certain guidelines and stipulations. But we get it back. We get our sanity back from that we needed and we asked to be returned to in step two. We had to give up our will in step three, and now we get it back under certain guidelines and conditions.
I'm going to share a little personal experience about this paragraph. When I've been sober about 7 years, six, seven, 8 years, somewhere along in that line, this program had worked so well in my life till I was in great shape, I thought. I had met this lady, and we were married. I had another business, and it was flourishing very well, and things were going good. And I got to the point where I said, you know, I am really glad that I got what AA had to offer. I am really grateful for that. And I was going to six or seven meetings a week still. And I had a chicken farm, and it was rather demanding. But then I started backing off on my meetings. And my wife and I, at the time, we had our devotional books, and we were doing our prayer and meditation. We were doing a lot of things. And I was working hard, and I started cutting back on my meetings. And if you had asked me during this period of time, was I working a good program, I would have probably told you yes. But when I started cutting back on my meetings, I come back to two or three a week, and then I cut back to one a week, and then I cut back to one every other week, and then I cut back to one a month. And for the last several months, I had not been to a meeting. And I was still doing my prayer and meditation and all that stuff. And I never wanted to drink. I never wanted to drink, but I thank God for that because I didn't have anything to do with it. But during this period of time, my disposition got so bad till I could not pick up the newspaper without wanting to hurt somebody. You know, the Charlotte Disturber just bothered me a lot when I never will forget one morning during this at the end of this period, I went out one morning and got the Charlotte Disturber. And I came back, and I had checked all my feeders, and everything was running well, and I was sitting there drinking coffee and reading this paper. And I saw an article. In Denver, Colorado, there was an unemployed 23-year-old barmaid.
Unmarried
barmaid on Medicaid. And she had determined that she was infertile. Now, you can call me old-fashioned or conservative or whatever you want to call me, but if you're 21, 23 years old, you don't have a job, and you're not married, I fail to see where fertility is an issue. But she went to a fertility clinic, and her boyfriend got her pregnant, and the upshot of that deal was she had four extremely premature babies. And they spent in excess of 6 months each in the neonatal intensive care unit at the Denver, Colorado hospital. And when she left with those children, the federal government's portion of her hospital bill was $2.8 million. And I'm as bad as Dick in some areas. And I saw that and I went ballistic. I said, this is absolutely, totally ridiculous. I tell you, I was so upset I called Dick, and that was a mistake. I called Dick, I said, Dick, did you read the paper this morning? He said, yeah. I said, did you read about that gal in Denver? He said, yeah, I read that. I said, don't you want to just hurt somebody? He said, no. And then he got ugly. He said, how many meetings have you been going to? And if you hadn't been to a meeting in several months, that's not really what you want to hear. Well, he suggested strongly that I should return to meetings. And that night, I met him at Queen City, and there was a kid named Mark who ate my lunch from the time he got up there till he got back. And I was so grateful I went, and during this period of time, I rededicated myself to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I was not doing anything to give back to the program that saved my life. And it's easy to do this, but I want you to mark that paragraph and watch yourself when you get there.
Because he said it's easy to let up.
If I had known,
but he said we're in trouble if we do, and that's what that first paragraph of step 10 says in the 12 and 12 too. Now comes the acid test, Bill says. Can I stay sober, maintain emotional balance, and live to good purpose in fair weather or in foul weather? And that's what Bill says here. Got to be careful. Much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction. He puts it back in there. See, after they made him take it out in chapter 5. From him who has all knowledge and power. If we have carefully followed directions, we will have begun to sense the flow of his spirit into us. To some extent, we have become God conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. And what he's talking about again here is that we've been propelled into this fourth dimension, the realm of the spirit, the world of the spirit, God consciousness out here. We have a new director out here. But we got to continue to work on that if I want to stay out here in the fourth dimension, in the dimension of God consciousness in the world of the spirit. If I want to stay out there, I got to continue to work out there. Step 11 is exactly where it belongs. It tells me what I got to do to maintain my position out here in this fourth dimension of existence. I want to be out there, folks. For one thing, it has no limitations, not restricted. I like it out there. I like it to be God conscious. I like to be in that fourth dimension. I'm not telling you I always stay there. I'm not holding myself out. But I can tell you that I like this fourth dimension of existence. I'm glad Bill mentioned it. I'm glad he shows me this way. And now step 11 is going to show me how to stay out there.
He said step 11 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy on this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works. If we have the proper attitude and work at it, it would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions.
What Bill's saying here is that Bill understood his spiritual limitations. He understood very clearly that he wasn't as spiritual as Dr. Bob, that Dr. Bob was much more spiritual, and every once in a while, Bill's inadequacy in the spiritual area becomes apparent. And he said it here when he's dealing with step 11. He said it'd be easy to be vague about the matter. Be really easy for Bill because he feels threatened here when he's trying to write a step that keeps us, the Oxford Group's idea of continuance, that keeps us out there, or can keep us out there in the fourth dimension. So he said it would be easy to be vague about the matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. And what he's going to do in these next pages, the next couple of pages that Jerry reads, he's going to tell us that I'm not going to specifically tell you how to develop a prayer life. The step says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God as I understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will, and the power to carry that out. He says, I'm not going to be dumb enough to try to tell you what kind of a prayer life you ought to have. I'm going to discuss some ideas about some areas you might consider, and you got to develop your own. Because if you develop mine, it wouldn't be useful to you. If we all develop Bill's, it wouldn't be useful to us. If I develop the prayer life of Ken Lyon, who's my senior minister, it would not be good for me. It wouldn't be valuable for me. I have to develop my own. So this is what he's going to do here.
Okay, so what he's going to do is he's going to tell us a lot of little things, and I would suggest that sometime after this study is over, you go back through this area and you read all of these deals, because I may not can get through it all. He said, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. Were we resentful, selfish, dishonest, or afraid? Do we owe an apology? Have we kept something to ourselves that should be discussed with another person at once? Were we kind and loving toward all? What could we have done better? Were we thinking of ourselves most of the time, or were we thinking of what we could do for others? Of what we could pack into the stream of life? Were we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection, for that would diminish our usefulness to others. After making our review, we ask God's forgiveness and inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And then, Dick's
the
kind
last,
of...
The last handout you got in your last page in your handout is a daily inventory. Sounds like this ought to be in step 10, but it's not. It's the nightly inventory that he just talked about in step 11.
And he tells us in the next paragraph what to do on a waiter.
He says here, check for these things at the end of the day. Now, you haven't got to make out one of these every day, but he says if you're going to bed at night or you're ending up your day and things aren't too hot, get this thing out and check it and see what personality characteristics that day you demonstrated. Were they God's will or were they your own? Were they selfish and self-seeking or were they interested in others? And you can go down this checklist, and you can see how your day went, and whether or not it was a good day in God's eyes, and what might be bothering you when you went to bed, and what you might need to take care of in your prayer before you went to sleep, or what you might need to take care of the next day because you hadn't taken care of it the day. Winston Churchill did this. We're not the only ones to do this. Winston Churchill, at the end of every day, he sorted out his day, and he asked himself what he had done that was good that he could capitalize on and do more of, and what he had done that was marginal or not so good that he needed to correct and have a different approach the next day. So we're not new at this. This is old stuff.
He tells us what to do on awakening. He said we think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially asking that it be divorced from self-pity, dishonesty, or self-seeking motive. Under these conditions, we can employ our mental faculties with assurance, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Our thought life will be placed on a much higher plane when our thinking is cleared of wrong motives.
That's an important time for prayer and meditation, in my opinion, is in the morning. I'm going to tell you that Bill doesn't tell me that what I got to do in the morning. He lets me develop my own prayer life in the morning, and I'm better at that than I am at the others. I'm better at the morning and the last thing at night, kind of quick, you know, wrap it up. But the morning situation is important to me, and it's been important. The first thing I did this morning when I drank that first cup of coffee at the Hampton Inn, before I brushed my teeth and shaved and did those other things, I read the 24-hour day book. Now, I know that it's non-conference approved. I'm sorry. But mine is in an old, ragged, leather-tooled cover that was given to me by the inmates at Central Prison in Raleigh, North Carolina in 1967, after I'd carried the program in there for a year and a half on Sunday afternoons inside the wall of Central Prison twice a month. They gave me that. And I still got my 24-hour book in it, and I still read it. And I can tell you that Stan Shoemaker got sober today. How many years ago, Jim?
23.
Stan Shoemaker was a guy that it was very important in our lives and started that big book study that occurs down behind the Cab General Hospital. Close guy in my life, very instrumental. I got that recorded in there. I got that recorded. One of the guys I sponsor had a 20th birthday yesterday, and I called him yesterday morning, got him out of bed, as a matter of fact, and wish him happy birthday. But I read that. I read the Daily Reflections. And I read another thing that I'm currently using. But I have developed in the morning my own prayer life. And he suggests here that I do that. I'm not telling you to develop mine, but go somewhere and find some material that will help you develop your own. That's what I did. I was kind of using some half-assed prayer thing in the morning, and I'd been sober a little while, and I got uncomfortable with what I was doing, and I decided to put some polish on that, so I went looking for a book. And I found a book by Maxie Dunham. And Maxie Dunham was a guy that was a minister who was kind of higher up in the Methodist church that I'm a part of. And, And so I got this workbook by Maxie on prayer. And I started to go through the outline that he suggested. And he suggested that I prepare myself by a period of preparation that I understand, that I, it's called adoration, where I'm adoring God for his position, where I'm grateful for mercy and I give him praise and I put him in his proper perspective. And I ask only for his will to be done in my life. That's it. Simple. I don't do anything else. And then he talks about intercessory prayer, where I'm praying for those people that I want to help. And it starts off with Barbara, and it starts with the rest of my family and my kids, and it goes on the people that are in my extended family and the people I sponsor and some people who have specific needs now, going through very tough medical difficulties, some cancer victims that are in there, some people that are none of these. And they find their way on my list. And I make that prayer list, and I use it, should have brought it in, I use it as a bookmark in the daily reflections. I'm 3x5 card size, computer printed on both sides with some new penciled additions and some folks that have lined up. But I use that as my morning prayer guideline. Why? Because I need something to keep my thoughts focused and do that. Because if I don't, I'm sitting here trying to put my prayer together and I'm thinking about that trip to the office and I'm thinking about two or three things I didn't get done yesterday that need to be done and what's coming up tomorrow over the weekend, and I'm not doing that. When I go down this list, I specifically pray for these individuals. Now, I don't sit, take 15 minutes for each one, but I think about each one. And this has had its rewards for me. And it's my own prayer life, and I don't expect you to use it. And because I wouldn't use yours. I wouldn't use Bill Wilson's. I wouldn't use Jerry's. But I got to make my own that's mine and seems to be helpful for me. Been some benefits from this. I get some satisfaction out of doing this. I feel like I've covered pretty well the whole thing that I want to cover. And I'll tell you very quickly about a reward that I had from it. There's a guy on here by the name of Martin Allen. He's on my prayer list. Martin is a Messianic Jew who I met in the sauna at the Dowd YMCA, where I'm a member and go frequently, very frequently, near downtown Charlotte, one day. And he looked kind of bad. He and I were talking about some kind of churchy stuff, and he said that he was he'd been depressed, and he hadn't gotten over and worked through the loss of his wife 6 or 7 months earlier. So I told Martin, I said, I'll put you on my prayer list. So I put him on there. But Martin and I don't have anything in common. Not one thing. He's not a racquetball player like I am. He goes down there for other reasons, works out other ways. But a couple months later, I saw him all the time. A couple months later, he said, you can take me off your prayer list. I've worked through that. And I said, I'll leave you on there.
It's hard to get off of his list, either one of them.
So I left Martin on there. A little while later, he said he was trying to get in. He has macular degeneration, so he's trying to get in some public housing, and he had some challenges there. I said, well, you're still on there. I'll work on that. So I kept Martin on there. One day in the steam room, in January 1997, I went in there, and Martin was there. Now, it's not what you call real spiritual place. I mean, you're buck naked in there, for one thing. And I went in there, Martin was there, sat down next to him, and he said, how's life going, Dick? And I said, I've had better times. I said, it's been a tough week for me. I had to go up to upstate New York. My sister and I had to put my mother in a nursing home, and she didn't know we were doing it. One of those things that are tough. That's a tough thing. And that guy, Martin Allen, just spontaneously, he put his arm on my shoulder right there in the steam room, and he prayed out loud for me the most moving and compassionate and rewarding prayer that I've ever had done. And I went out of there, I was much moved, like Bill was. And so there are some rewards. Now, guess what? Martin's still on my prayer list. I wouldn't take him off for the world. He was on there when my mother passed away a year later and prayed with me. Other people did, too, that are on my list. And I got support of the guys that I sponsor. I see people who, I know people who have good prayer life, who are much, much, much better at prayer than I am. But I want to get better, and I keep working on this deal that I use. One of the examples that Jerry and I like in about prayer, we found in the newspaper, the Charlotte Disturber, but in a better section of it, a long time ago. It's written by Ken Garfield. He's a religious editor of the Charlotte Observer, and the title is "Urge to Pray Hits Anywhere, Even the Mall." And it goes on to a story about a guy by the name of Perrell, an older gentleman, 72 years old, who started his regular walk through South Park Mall. And the cleaning ladies of South Park would see him every day walking through the mall, and they struck up a friendship, some of the cleaning ladies and Perrell, who would walk through the mall. And this particular morning, however, they saw Perrell. He looked like something was wrong, so they asked him. And all he could think about was his 14-year-old granddaughter, who was struck by a car a day or two before up in Cabarrus County, and she was in serious condition in the intensive care unit at Carolina's Medical Center. And the cleaning ladies, Lizzie Thomas, Frankie Crowder, and Bessie Jenkins. I know some differences in these people, but I know they're because they got Lizzie Thomas's picture in here and they got Porell's in here. The three cleaning ladies who had kind of befriended him when he was walking, they asked him what was wrong, and he told them this. And guess what they did? He says, "She grabbed my hand and started praying." Right there in the middle of the mall. And when he asked Lizzie why she did that, she said, "Lord tells me to lay hands on the sick and pray, and I do that, and I pray wherever I'm at."
Yeah, and the bad part, and the good part of this thing was, it wasn't just where she was. This is about 2 or 3 weeks before Christmas. In South Park Mall.
Outside of Morrison's Cafeteria in South Park Mall.
And there is 500,000 people running up and down that mall at that time of day. And Lizzie Thomas was not in the least concerned with what people were going to say or how it looked or anything else. She had a God that she felt could help, and she beseeched him to help her friend. And she did that in front of everybody right there in that mall. And I'm going to tell you something. I would love to know that I could someday get to where Lizzie is. She's my hero. Lizzie is on my prayer list. Has been ever since. I don't even know the lady, but I love her to death.
Isn't it great? There's a goal for us, folks. Because I got that goal the same as Jerry. I'm reasonably comfortable with my prayer life, but I want to be like Lizzie.
I would love to be like Lizzie. You know, and it says this next one is kind of important down here in this little paragraph. He said, "In thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take."
I wonder how he knew that we alcoholics would face that.
He said, "Here we ask God for inspiration." Now, I'm not going to tell you that I'm a supreme guru and I always know what I'm supposed to do during the day. And I don't always know what the course of action is. But I'm going to tell you the way I handle this. And it helps me, and it works out pretty good. Every morning when I get up, I don't always know what I need to do. But I guarantee you one thing. I have an absolute definite picture of what I don't need to do. I don't need to drink. I don't need to hurt anybody. I don't need to be inconsiderate of people. I don't need to be dishonest. I don't need to exercise any of my character defects. And by determining for sure what I don't need to do, it gives me a great direction to take. And if I will take the direction away from what I know I shouldn't do, usually it puts me in pretty good shape. In pretty good shape. Okay. Now, over on the bottom of the next page, He tells us kind of...
He gives us some examples on page 87. He tells us a little bit on how to pray and who we might choose some people to pray with and to join in our devotion, and that's fine. And he tells us about praying for the little things and circumstances, the little things that come up in our life, by praying about those, not necessarily the big things, but the little things. You see, Bill here just gives us some guidelines to follow. He said it'd be easy to be vague, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions, and this is what he does. And I hope that as we've gone through this, you understand that Bill never did tell us how to prepare, how to prepare our prayer life. He never did tell me. He left that option up to me to do. But he does tell us we need to do it. I have made a stumbling attempt at it. I hope you do. Bottom of page 87.
Okay, he said, as we go through the day, we pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, thy will be done.
Remember, he just finished saying that if I continued to do that, I was giving back my will. It was proper use of the will. So he's given us a little idea here again on how I can maintain my position out there in the fourth dimension, and it's the proper use of the will if I try to do that.
He said, we are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions.
Now, isn't that a good release to have? Less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions? That's a pretty good reward.
Yeah, we become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. And this is the shortest paragraph in the book.
And the promise of step 11.
It works. It really does. Okay, now we're going into chapter 7, working with others.
Now, this is an important chapter, but we're not going to take a lot of time on it because we're going to let you do like you did in step 11. You can formulate your own working with others plan. There are three parts to step 12. Jerry's mentioned this before. The first part of step 12 says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. Now, that's not too tough to figure out. What it says is that we must have had, by this time, a spiritual awakening of some sort as a result of the previous 11 steps. It doesn't say it'd be a good idea if you had one. It'd be nice if you could. A lot of folks do. Seems to suit them. It says, having had one. That's a pretty strong statement. And I guess my interpretation of it is that if I haven't had one, some sort of an awakening by this point, I better go back through the first 11 steps and find out how come.
Reread the book up to this point or
throw
else.
Throw it away. That's
throw
what
it
Bill
away.
Said. Because he said, I having had a spiritual awakening. And that's a pretty profound statement. And then he says, I do two things with this. First, I carry this message to alcoholics. And all of chapter 7, working with others, is devoted to that middle third of step 12, carrying the message to alcoholics. There's all sorts of ways to do that. You can get all sorts of ways to carry the message to alcoholics. I'm going to tell you very quickly that I got a phone call in the parking lot of the Hampton Inn Friday afternoon before we came over here from a gal who goes to my home group who was all in a lather because a student nurse had showed up Tuesday night to the closed AA meeting. And can you imagine that? Can you imagine how bad that is? Out there in Indian Trails, out in the woods anyway. Anyway...
The crows are anonymous in Indian Trail.
This says carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffered, offsetting her anger because a suspicious person came into a closed meeting. Offsetting that is the idea that maybe through this girl, as a nurse, the message of recovery will be carried to someone who, at that particular moment, needs to hear it. It doesn't restrict us to how to carry the message. It's very broad. But here's what he tells us very quickly in chapter 7. He starts off by saying,
Okay, he starts off saying, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help them when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers and with each other is the bright spot of our lives.
Remember, in the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous, as it formed out in Akron with Dr. Bob and Bill Wilson, and then Bill Dotson, number 3, and then Ernie Galbraith, number 4, and the rest of them, that this was all they had to do, essentially. There wasn't much fellowship. They had to stay sober. You remember what it kept Bill sober for 2.5-3 months before he got there? Was working with others. So 6 months before he got there, then working with others. And so this was a concept right from the beginning. How important it was for their sobriety, and laced throughout this big book, again and again, Bill refers to the importance of working with others. Here he says, nothing so much ensures immunity from drinking as intensive work with alcoholics. So the question comes, well, how do I work with them? What do I do? Well, let's flip over to 92. I'm going to just give you 3 ideas out of chapter 7. 3 ideas that Bill presents. They're pretty complicated now, so you might want to be ready to take some notes. But in the first paragraph, on page 92, Bill says, if you are satisfied that he or she is alcoholic, falls in the description, not a hard drinker, not a moderate drinker, but alcoholic, falls in the description over and more about alcoholism, fits the doctor's description of can't drink successfully, can't quit successfully, begin to dwell on the hopeless feature of the malady. Show them from your own experience how the queer mental condition surrounding that first drink prevents normal functioning of willpower. What does that say? Tell them about the disease concept of alcoholism. Because of the physical allergy, can't drink. Because of the mental obsession, can't quit. Tell them about your own story about how you couldn't drink successfully because you had it. And how you couldn't quit successfully because of this emotional condition you were in. Tell them about that. Simple. Tell them about the doctor's opinion. Tell them a little bit about Bill's story. Tell them your own story. Complicated? No. Now, at the bottom of the page, it says, last sentence, even though your protege, this person, may not have entirely admitted his or her condition, they may become curious as to how you got well. When they hear that you were as bad off as they are, they're as bad off as you are, they may become curious of how you got well. Let them ask you the question, if they will, in italics. Tell them exactly what happened to you. Stress the spiritual feature freely. If the person be agnostic or atheist, make it emphatic that they do not have to agree with your conception of God, that they can choose any conception they like provided it makes sense to them. The main thing is that they be willing to believe in a power greater than themselves and that they live by spiritual principles. Tell them about the need for a power greater than human power in your life. Tell them about step 2. Tell them how the down payment is lowered. Tell them how they can make a beginning on belief or willingness to believe. And tell them that's where you began to recover from the condition you told them about in the previous page, 92. Are you simple? Tell them about the decision you made. Tell them about the need for a power greater than human. Tell them about step 2. Tell them about step 3, about the decision you made because your will wasn't working. Pretty simple. I'll flip the page over, and it tells us what to do next. First paragraph, page 94. Outline the program of action. That's complicated, isn't it? Outline step 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11. Explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past. And then tell them about why you're endeavoring to be helpful to them. 3 short sections in the book that I think outlines specifically how we are to work with others in the early days of their recovery. I don't think that's very complicated. I was kidding when I told you it was complicated. But I don't think it's complicated at all. I think we tell them about the grave nature of alcoholism. I think if we do that and we share our own experience as far as the grave nature of alcoholism is concerned, I think we tell them how we recovered from that seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And then we tell them about the program that permitted us to access the power to do that. Just what we've been talking about the last 11 hours here at this particular big book study. Not very complicated. Now the third part of step 12 is the easy part. It says, practice these principles in all our affairs. And I know you, like me, find that very easy to do. Don't have any trouble with it at home. Don't have any trouble with it in traffic. Don't have any trouble with it on the job. So we won't... But he says that as a result of this spiritual awakening that I've had of the previous 11 steps, that I should do two things. One is work with other alcoholics, pass it on to them in the method that we've just explained, and to practice these principles. What principles are we talking about? 12th step. Bill never talks about the principles unless he uses the term principle, unless he's talking about the step. Uses it twice right before the ABCs. Each time he's talking about the previous 12 principles. He starts out the 12 and 12 by saying 12 steps are a set of principles, spiritual in nature. So every time Bill talks about principles, he's talking about the 12 steps. And so he said, practice these principles in all our affairs. How are you going to do that? Make your own program, folks. You got to make your own because your affairs are different than everybody else's. So you got to make your own application of the third part of the 12th step.
And there's three reasons you really need to get into this 12th step. Three reasons you need the 12th step. You know, there's more potential for growth and benefits in working step 12 than there is other than sobriety that comes forth. One of them, the first reason is that it works in our own sobriety when nothing else will. The second reason we have to do this is we have to give it away to keep it. What's the third one, Dick?
Well, the third reason is that
We're better at it than anybody in the world.
We're better at it than anybody else is in the world. And don't ever let anybody convince you differently. We're better at it than anyone else. Page 164. You hear this a lot. I may point out a couple of things that we don't say a lot about, but...
Okay, middle of page 164. He says, our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little.
See, Bill confesses here that, golly, it's hard to cover the whole field of recovery from a disease that nobody's recovered from in 164 pages. So we know that there may be more written. We're not restricting this. And he says that. We understand we only know a little.
He said, God will constantly disclose more to you and to us.
He gives us opportunity to explore other things because he says, God will constantly reveal more. But we got to do a couple of things if these things are going to be disclosed.
He said,
one of them is,
ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick.
That's pretty easy, isn't it? I get that part of it, so that God will constantly reveal more to me if I do that. The second part, however,
is a little more difficult. He puts a condition on this. He said, the answers will come if your own house is in order.
Well, that's kind of a subjective statement. If your own house is in order, so I guess that God will constantly reveal more to me if I continue to work hard and get my own house in order.
He said, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got.
Now see this next qualification for the thing that follows. There's one thing that follows, and here's the qualification for that.
He said, see to it that your relationship with him is right.
So if your relationship with him, capital H, is right, that's the only condition, then
great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us.
Oh, if I want great events, and there are great events, I hope we've demonstrated some up here this weekend, you have great events in your own life. They will come to pass under one condition and one condition only. It doesn't say go to 7 meetings a week. It doesn't say sponsor 25 people. It doesn't say to pray 150 times a day. It doesn't say to don't do this or do this. One condition.
If your relationship with him is right. He said, abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
A lot of people close their activities with this, but we're going to make a couple of quick comments before we close, just to kind of let you understand why what we've done for the last 11 and 12 hours has been important to us and may be important to you. Going through this basic textbook, Alcoholics Anonymous. I want you to understand that in October 14th, 1939, about 6 months after the Big Book was published, it was reviewed by the Journal of American Medical Association publication, JAMA. And here's what they had to say about the Alcoholics Anonymous textbook, the story of more than 100 men who have recovered from alcoholism. He says, the book under review is a curious combination of organizing propaganda and religious exhortation. It closes out by saying the one valid thing in the book is the recognition of the seriousness of addiction to alcohol. Other than that, the book has no scientific merit or interest. Wasn't that a great review? Well, let me tell you how much merit and interest this had. 2.5 million people recovered as a result of the basic program in this book. And we've been permitted to establish a legacy or a standard that we can pass on to others. See, that's what I want to do. That's what I want you folks to do. That's what Jerry and I want you folks to do. That's why we continue to say before we say the Lord's Prayer that you're the most important people here. Because it's with this concept that you can continue to work with others and help them. And then this idea of recovery will be available to your children and your children's children, your children's children's children, your friends' children, and the people who come behind us. We want that to happen. This is a big deal. It's not what the JAMA organization said, that we don't have any serious merit. There's serious stuff. Over there on the wall in the archives, you'll see a picture of Bill Wilson making coffee in his kitchen. You know where that picture appeared? It appeared in people who subscribed to Life magazine in the fall of 1980. They published a special edition of Life magazine of the 100 most important Americans of the 20th century. On page 66, that appears. Bill W. for Disease of the Body, Treatment of the Soul. One of the most 100 and most important Americans in all of the 20th century. This is serious business. We're about serious stuff. Time magazine did the same thing in June of 2000, I think it was. But again, the 100 heroes and icons of the 20th century. On page 201, the healer, Bill W. Got a picture of the old homestead here. Got a picture of Bill. Aldous Huxley said about him, the greatest social architect of our century. One of the 100 most important heroes and icons of the 20th century by this group that was put together by Time magazine. We're about serious business. This is serious stuff. We've been graced and given a great mission to carry on. We can't handle it lightly. The freedom and the things that have been given to me freely. Somebody says, why do you do this? Because Jerry and I could do this 24 hours a day for the rest of our physical lives, and we could never give back.
100% of what's been given to us. A chance to live two lives in one lifetime. Maybe you can do that, not only in your own life, but in the life of some other person. Give them a chance to live two lives.
You know, in defense of that JAMA book review that they had last year, the Charlotte Observer did a list of the 100 most influential spiritual books of the 20th century, and guess what was sixth on the list?
Number six on the list, folks.
Alcoholics Anonymous.
Big job. We're about serious business. Would you help me close this with the Lord's Prayer, please?